Blog Talk Radio.
Yep.
Good morning, and welcome to The Unknown Zone. This is the talk show about the unusual. I'm your host, Dave Turco, with co-host Judy Sellens and our monthly guest, Mr. Gary McKinstry. He is an internationally known psychic medium and tarot reader, an all-around great guy, and he's going to be with us for the whole hour. So anybody who'd like a free reading, you're free to call in. And our call-in number is 347-637-2956. It's right on our show page, so you can call in anytime. Good morning, Judy. Good morning, Gary.
Hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
Beautiful day.
Well, it's a kind of drizzly day down here, but at least it's warm compared to what it's been.
After the sub-zero temperatures of the weekend, anything over 32 is a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Agreed. My poor daffodils. Along the house, somehow, we had a blizzard back in the middle of or early February and then had all that snow. So I didn't even notice these things. These daffodils, somehow, when the snow had melted, I'm talking they're up like a foot. And with the, you know, the flower part ready to open up. And now, as of, you know, the Arctic blast that we had, it was just like they were lying flat.
Right.
So I don't know if they're going to make it.
They're pretty hardy, though. They should pop back. So
yeah, I'll check today.
Yeah, everybody,
we have another Arctic blast this weekend, so.
I know. And I'm pretending that's going to be the end of it all. And we'll kind of go into late winter, early spring. That would be absolutely fantastic. I would take this winter any year.
Yeah, this wasn't bad. You know, I was thinking the other day, I only had to wear my heavy down jacket, I think, one time.
Yeah.
Other than that, I've just worn a windbreaker.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a nice winter, you know, as far
as
meteorologically.
Yeah.
It was probably unimpressive for the weather people, but it was nice for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually we go through that pattern where the storms just come up the coast, and it's almost like a hurricane where it's like a hit or miss. Anytime could just be a life-altering blast. But, yeah, that really – we only had that one blizzard, and that did come up the coast, I think. Or at least it came off the coast. I can't remember what direction it came from. But usually, yeah, but – because Judy and I are right here in southern New England where we stick out from the ocean. Anything that comes out south of Long Island, we kind of get blasted, and it just increases its power. It's just awful. But, yeah, we lucked out.
Yeah, I'm down to two. I have two little lumps of snow in my yard.
Wow.
Wide.
I don't think we have anything anymore.
Mm-mm, we don't.
It lasted for quite a while after the blizzard, but I don't think we have... I haven't seen anything around here.
These are the pieces that they totally froze. They have the ice underneath, and they just refuse to go.
Yeah.
Even after 60-degree weather, they're still here. It's that thing where you want to go out with a shovel and break them up, but you don't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I'm going like, I could get rid of these. And I was like, nah, let's see how long they last.
And, you know, and just for perspective, and I know there's always this debate about the weather and climate change and such. I work at ABC Photo Lab, so if anybody still wants to have film developed, we do it. Anyway, it's a dying art. So we got this film, and I'm looking at it, and because I've looked at people's pictures and old slides, tens of thousands of these things over just the last couple of years since I've worked there, I can pretty much on site tell you where you are in the world because I've just seen them all over, even desert areas. I can sort of tell which desert it is without knowing. Anyway, so I'm looking, I'm like, okay, this is Montana. So she, So I asked the lady, and she said, yeah, we just got back from Yellowstone. And, like, nobody goes there in the winter. I guess they open it up specifically for little people. So she said, literally, we were at Old Faithful with 10 people. She said it was amazing. Anyway, these pictures were astonishing. The road was 10 feet below them of packed snow, and then still 30 feet on the sides. They had 40 feet of snow there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they always get tremendous snow up there.
So, I mean, that hardly makes the news. 40 feet of snow.
Well, back in February when we got, like, you remember the two big storms we had?
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend of mine up in Maine, and they had gotten 5 feet.
Yeah.
And the two storms produced 5 feet of snow.
Oh.
And we're down here going like, we got 10 inches. It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's a big thing. Anyhow, Gary, do you have anything new going on?
Well, yes and no. We've been busy. For some reason, our season started early this year because I do a lot of fundraisers. We do a lot of events.
Yes, you do, yeah.
The event stuff started like real early this year. It seems like we're just keep rolling this year. Everybody seems to be very interested in the medium end of things. Not that I love both parts, but for some reason there seems to be, I don't know if it's me or if it's just a great interest in the like I said, the medium world.
You know what, Gary, I was going to say, when you look at our history, let's just say in this country, but actually you could kind of use at least Europe or whatever. And there are always periods when it kind of like rises and falls. And then we went through, let's say, the Helena Blavatsky and those people at the end of the 1800s into the early 1900s. That was a height. And then it waned and then everybody poo-pooed it. That was all fake. And then the New Age really started to rise up in, say, the late 60s, early 70s, really peaked out through the 80s and then sort of fell again with Ramtha and whatever. Everybody sort of was making fun of her on even things like Saturday Night Live, right? But, you know, this time I think we got over the hump where it didn't really collapse.
No. it's interesting. And by the way, the people that are coming to see me want hyper-realistic.
Mm-hmm.
They're not looking for the angelic. They're not looking for, you know, like, they want literally the validation. They want, you know, like, okay, if it's Uncle Harold, I need to know. It's very different now. You know, there was a time where people would come and go like, I need to know who my guardian angels are, and which is lovely.
Yeah.
But now it's more like I need to connect with this one. I need to connect with that one. And you know, for me, it's fun. I enjoy it. You know, it's a fascinating kind of deal, because while you're doing it, you're literally detaching from here for that space of time. So
right.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just interesting how it's changed. It's funny.
Yeah. What I was going to say, exactly what you're saying. The difference is, as opposed to being even the people that sort of believed, there was always some level of skepticism. Is it real? And now, like, that's, for those who are doing this, that part's sort of gone. It's just simply accepted. The ones that they've determined are legit,
yeah,
as far as the mediums go, you know, then that sort of just taken out of the equation. It's been long proved. You know, it's so much out there. And I know Judy kind of, well, we all have our interests. I've been watching a lot of near-death experiences again, you know, on YouTube. There are thousands of these things. Some are fake and some are terrible. Okay, they're just, some are just awful. But in the main, you can tell when you're watching these things. And a lot of them are recent, meaning they happened within the last 5 years for these folks and have come to terms with it. But some of them, it's not. This is from, like, you know, 1965 in Vietnam, and they're finally talking about it now, but, you know, it never left them because people used to make fun of them. But now, that sort of thing that used to be, and you'll see, you'll click on some of them, and they're just like repeats from a old TV show where, again, it was like, seems legit, but who knows? It still could just be a trick of your mind. It could be a dream, you know, or, you know, that sort of thing. And again, people simply accept it now because there are millions of these things out there and people are just free to talk about it. And again, with modern medicine, a lot of these people are doing it in the hospital and they know that person's quote unquote dead. Some of these people end up waking up in the morgue. It's pretty heavy duty. So it wasn't like, no, your heart just stopped for like 30 seconds. No. These are really, really big cases. So again, it's that sort of thing where it's all part and parcel of the same thing, where the understanding that we are more than a physical body and a result of a bunch of chemicals interacting with each other.
You may have known the waning of the ghost culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for quite a while there, we had a 10-year hit where everything was ghost this and ghost that, ghost hunters,
yeah.
Ghost mentors, ghost
yeah.
Bathroom. And that finally seems to be dwaning now. You know, I think Ghost Hunters is now off the air. You
know? Oh, I don't even know. Yeah, they very well could be.
Jason from Ghost Hunters, the bald. Which one's the bald one there, though?
Jason,
yeah.
He's back to doing Roto-Rooter commercials.
Wow.
I don't think he has to. I understand he made milk.
Oh, I'm sure he did. I know they even bought a hotel up in New Hampshire and the whole
yep.
bit. But it's just funny. The other day I'm watching TV and there he is in his, you know, and he's got a jacket on and he's got a flashlight and he's in somebody's basement. And he says, sometimes when you hear knocking and banging, it's not a ghost. You need Roto-Rooter. And I'm going like, okay. Times have changed. You know, I think people get tired of the door creaked and possibly I heard a voice discarnate three rooms away.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, people want validation. They want to be able to, they really want to be able to know that there's something viable there.
Although, you know, on my paranormal channel that I have, it seems like there's, not only are they after all the little weird animal people, creatures in the mountains and in the
yeah.
woods and everything, but they've got a number of different ghost adventure type things.
Oh yeah, but now it's gone more to like almost hometown reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before
yeah.
Big budget shows, you know, like Sci-Fi put out Ghost Hunters, and they spent a lot of money on that show.
Oh, yeah, they did. Mm-hmm.
And
they had top-notch equipment.
Yeah. Now it's kind of like a small crew in Louisiana going through the bayou looking for, you know, I've noticed that the change. I happen to have an Amazon Fire Stick, which basically means there's thousands of Ghost Hunter shows on.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, you can get, I think, Ghost Hunters from every 50 states and just about every county in America. You know, anybody with a GoPro now pretty much is out there. But
mm-hmm.
I've noticed the audience part has seemed to have dwaned to a great degree. You know, it
right.
was fashionable.
Well, I think it's like anything they get, even these reality programs and stuff, they just inundate the audience and the people out there so that after a while they just get sick of the whole thing and start going to something else.
That's like I've tried to watch Curse of Oak Island.
Right.
Yeah.
Me too.
I can't get into it.
After three seasons, they found four coins in a piece of chain.
Yeah.
What's really disturbing to me is they even do a show of the Curse of Oak Island where they're taking questions. They do I don't know if it airs on Sci-Fi, but I stumbled on it on YouTube and I thought, oh, this could be good because this could be where you actually find some real information. Because for instance, I stumbled on something remember this is at least 10 years ago. I think there was something called UFO Hunters. I think they were called.
Sure.
And
yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think Bill Barnes was on it and
yeah.
He's actually pretty legit. And what was great was I got a lot of inside information. Not that I got it, but, you know, only because I watched it. It was not just for, it was anybody who was watching this thing. It was on TV and or wherever it was, on the computer. And he said, because there are constraints to our show, he said, what gets on air is not everything that we experience and or are told. He said, the stuff you get off air of what actually happens to some of these people or what they really experienced, they're not, that does not, you know, get, it doesn't get past the cutting room floor. And he goes, that's the big stuff. There's stuff way, way, way more. I don't want to say that's actually evidence, but at least firsthand accounts, he said, were way more than actually gets on air. On the flip side, Oak Island, the brothers were still exactly the same. One who's sort of like all in and the other one who's still a doubting Thomas and thinks that it's, I don't know what. He goes, well, yeah, somebody did come and put a lot of coconut husk there. That's unusual. And it's like, unusual? They dated the stuff. Think of how much it would be. That's a man-made lagoon they made there. Now, even if you made it today, look at what the technology they got today and they're struggling even to dig in there. Think about hundreds of years ago in the middle of nowhere. Because what is this, Nova Scotia or something?
It is.
Oak Island, Nova Scotia. This is remote. Yeah. We had, what, a bunch of Mi'kmaq Indians at your heels or something? I mean, and you actually constructed this thing and have these shafts. And I don't care if nothing was put down there. The fact that this stuff was largely man-made is extraordinary, a work of engineering.
Well, I think what it is with, like, the Curse of Oak Island, I think whatever was is gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I kind of got a feeling somebody found, and it's, you know, like, okay, we found it, it's gone, left all the stuff behind, and I don't mean the Templar or whoever built it. I think basically the explorers over the years, each found something.
Yeah.
And kind of, like, took it with them. You know, so it's kind of like, okay, we're more like looking through the trash heap on Oak Island now.
Right. See, this is what people, it drives people crazy, and there's a hook for a while, but I think this is sort of, you know, drying up for them, because there are too many people like us that it's like, okay, we get 3 years, that's enough. You know, you've got to give us something, because again, whichever station that is has thrown some money into that thing to get the equipment. However, they're just finding stuff that other searchers had found before.
Right.
It's like, oh, we're such and such was 100 years ago.
Right. We found the oak beam.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
I had just turned that on the other night. I was flipping through and it, I kind of stopped there for a second, which is about all I give him usually. But one brother is saying to the other brother, look, we've gone through all these different chambers. We found absolutely nothing. There's a time when you have to call it quits, and this is probably the time we need to call it quits. Then, of course, the other brother goes, yes, but there's one more place I'd like to try, because who knows, maybe it's there. It's like, how much more can you drag this thing out?
Right.
The island, I think they have enough holes in it, you know.
Well, you know,
yeah.
The interesting thing, though, what I did glean from their little Q&A section with the public was that, you know, it was something question like, did this give you the scavenger hunt bug type of thing? And they said, yes, it did. And in fact, see, this is again a la Jason and Grant from Ghost Hunters, that they actually made lots and lots of money.
Yes.
I think that these folks did too. For all that they're in the early days, it's like, oh, we got to be really frugal with our money. Okay, maybe part of it was your money in the beginning. Obviously, whichever network that is ponying up the money here. Anyhow, they said, yes, there are various sites around the world and we've invested in, and we've already got some return on our investment. It's been very fruitful.
Yes.
And I'm like, So
They're not going to film those.
Yeah, those aren't films where you actually get something. It's just like with, and by the way, I do believe in Sasquatch, Bigfoot, whatever. Doesn't mean every single sighting ever, but there's some great ape like being out there. No question. And there was, you know, that show actually wasn't that bad. Whatever that was called, something like Bigfoot Hunters or something.
Finding Bigfoot. Yeah.
Finding Bigfoot.
It's still on.
Oh. And interestingly, I know we talked about this one time. They actually did a show from Rhode Island, of all places.
Yep.
Rhode Island is heavily wooded.
Yes, it is.
It's heavily wooded. Anything can be out there. And when I saw some of the folks who actually were Native American saying that they had a sighting back in the 70s, you know, well, all right, that's somewhat legit. But one of the shows that they did do from Alaska, those people were absolutely unequivocal. They were Native Americans by and large. And, you know, what they described, it was just clear something was going on. However, there's still that thing. The most you'll get is a hoot or a howl at night.
Yeah.
Even if they had Bigfoot, they're not going to show you because that would end the show.
Sure.
It would end the program. So that is maddening to me.
When you mentioned Rhode Island, you get into the northwestern part of Rhode Island up near Foster and
mm-hmm.
that
yeah.
area there. There's a lot of woodland up there.
Oh, yeah.
People forget. It stretches through. Everyone forgets that at the state border, things don't end. You know,
right.
It's kind of like you go from the Sterling, Connecticut area into the Rhode Island area and the state forest that runs all through there.
Right.
You got miles and miles of dirt roads and nothing else, railroad track, and that's about it. You know,
mm-hmm.
We've been through some of that areas for other reasons, and like I said, it's very remote. You know, if you look at it, Connecticut's heavily wooded, and it runs straight into Rhode Island.
Correct.
You know, so if there's something out there, why wouldn't it? It's not going to stop at the border and go like, well, I can't go into Rhode Island. Yeah.
Right. I forget there's an actual technical term for it. Whatever that green belt is, Great Northern Forest, or whatever it is, it is contiguous from upstate New York through Mass, through Connecticut, into Rhode Island, of all places.
Green Valley, yes.
Yeah, something like that, right. And all of these things, you know, again, this is a weird thing where it's falls into that same category. You got the doubting Thomases on one side and the Mulders, you know, that I want to believe on the other side. And people have seen mountain lions.
Yes.
Then, of course, you get the state
okay, well,
to declare.
Stop for a second. I'll explain the mountain lion thing to you.
All right.
You could have one dead in your yard, and they will come and say it's an alleged mountain lion because mountain lions are federally protected. And as soon as you have a confirmed mountain lion living in the area, not passing through, but living in the area, all construction has to stop in that state.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. So there is no state in New England that will say there is a mountain lion because suddenly this means urban development has to cease for the mountain lion.
Wow.
So this is why you will always hear alleged mountain lion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
we have them here. It's absolutely
right,
extraordinary stuff, yeah.
The next
battle right
over for me is on the Rhode Island border. Oh, mm-hmm. You know, like there's Webster Douglas,
mm-hmm.
and there was a person that took wonderful photographs of a mountain lion in their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And the state said, it's an alleged mountain lion, and it doesn't live here. It's probably passing through from upstate
South
New York
Dakota.
Or whatever, okay? And we keep getting sightings, which basically means that there's a male and a female and there's cubs here somewhere. And
mm-hmm.
I spoke to someone from the Fish and Game Department, and they said, well, if we do that, we have to report it to the feds. And if we do that, the feds will say, now, let's say the shopping center was going to go in here, you can't do that. If the housing development was going to go in here, we can't do that.
Excellent.
This is why you have alleged mountain lions.
Aha, uh-huh. Got it. This is great.
Sense.
Uh-huh. At least that makes sense because the number of people, there are these little societies now where they share their stories and photos or whatever. It's undeniable. And also, not only do we have the coyotes and coy wolves, we actually have wolf wolves. They're actually wolves. But yeah, just finishing up with the mountain lion, they were being seen in western Connecticut in populated areas. And of course, one got hit on the Merritt Parkway. And so that was undeniable. So then they said, well, it could be an exotic pet. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing was they did a DNA analysis of this one lone mountain lion. And it shared the DNA of the mountain lion strain in South Dakota. So therefore, this animal was born in South Dakota and was looking for a mate, and it had strayed a record amount of distance looking for a mate.
It came to the Merritt Parkway.
Yeah. So they made it sound as though it was a transient. It was just a transient. So that explains why they stressed that it was a transient. And it's like, it's not a transient. These things live here.
Our farmer friends have seen mountain lions and bobcats and stuff out into their, I mean, a lot of them have hundreds of acres that they're farming. And just going out there like really early in the mornings to start plowing and doing things, like they see these things all the time, and they've seen them for decades. It's nothing like something new.
They do have a very large territory, which they actually almost walk their circumference. So
right.
You could see one tomorrow and probably not see it for another 2 years by the time it makes its whole trek.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they have a huge territory.
Right. I have a bobcat that comes through here, and you don't see him maybe like every 3 to 4 years. And it's because the path that he goes on, he has a territory. He has dens here, dens there. It's kind of like he goes everywhere he wants.
Yep.
Very, very much like the Native Americans when they used to basically roam, you'd have a camp here and a camp there. The animal does the same thing. It doesn't have one place it stays. You know, it has hunting territories, and that's kind of how they live. So it's not unusual there was a time when I'd see the bobcat and I wouldn't see him, like I say, for probably about 2 to 3 years. And then sure enough, he'd be back again, and people go like, where'd he go? Well, basically, it's just like us. Some people go to Florida for the summer,
Right.
Yeah.
My
daughter woke up and had one sitting on her front porch. She gets a lot of wild animals, but she's right near Exeter, but she's also in Charleston.
Right.
And so... But, I mean, she's been chased into her house by a mother bear and her cubs.
Sure.
And, they just have tons of wild animals up there. But she got up one morning, and there's this bobcat just sitting lovely sunning itself on her front porch. And she just had to wait for it to leave before she could go out and do her farm chores and stuff. But, typical.
Right. In the 1800s, the Europeans came and pretty much deforested New England.
Right.
Yeah. So
they cut between firewood houses, masts for ships, this and that. There wasn't much left here. And now we're talking, like 200 years later. And basically what's happened is, yes, you have a lot of urban development, but you have these little – you have actually more trees now than they did in the 1800s.
That's right.
Just that they're all in dense little areas. You have a 2-acre parcel, a 3-acre, maybe a 10-acre parcel, and the animals have adapted. They're not crazy. There are certain matter of fact. This year in upstate New York and into western Massachusetts, they had a mouse epidemic. Literally, mice were invading homes at record numbers, and because basically. There are so many urban areas with these little swatches of forests.
Mm-hmm.
Mice would breed in the forest, head to the house, and then breed in the house. And the hawk population, because a hawk needs, 10 to 15 acres to roam, don't really go in those areas. So basically the mice have now burgeoned to the point where it's kind of like they're invading homes at record numbers.
Wow.
Because they're also spreading Lyme disease because the mice infest the air. But it's a whole cycle. But if you look at it, all the creatures have pretty much changed their lifestyle and pattern to live with us.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Massachusetts has the largest deer population it's ever had.
Well,
wow.
We live right here in downtown Westerly. And the other day, we had 6 deer in the yard next door.
Oh, yeah.
You're kidding
and they,
me.
They were going through jumping over the chain link fences from yard to yard.
The state
wow.
of Connecticut actually has at one point was hiring hunters to clear the golf courses.
Yeah. Yeah.
The population is, you know, even in my, where we live, there's acreage behind us. And I have about 30 to 35 turkeys. We call it the Turkey Highway here.
Mm-hmm.
And the deer population, you know, probably right now the herd is maybe about 10 to 15 strong because it was an open winter.
Yeah.
When you have the young ones are prey to the coyotes and all that kind of stuff. A few years ago, we had the winter from hell where we had, you know, like all that snow.
Right.
Believe it or not, that was actually good for the deer population because the coyotes couldn't run.
Yeah.
Right.
But
yeah.
On the flip side, the population did well because the acorns were available. Why? Wow, I sound like a wildlife person here, but deer, like, they love acorn. They love, you know, I'll use the term bark, that kind of thing.
Right.
And because this year the acorns were plentiful, they fell, and basically the deer could scavenge off the ground all winter except for maybe 3 weeks.
That could be one of the reasons why we had these 6 right on the side of, I mean, just on the side of our house.
Yeah.
Because this year was just tremendous with the acorns and stuff.
True.
And, I mean, maybe they were just in the yard just eating those. I mean, they come in and eat our lawn down and stuff, too. And
oh, yeah,
we try to get people to leave them alone, but, you know.
Well, they're not going to harm anything, you know. They're beautiful animals.
Yes, they are.
But there's always that mentality that they want to get out and take pictures and chase them around.
Yeah.
And it's like, go away. If you've ever cornered a deer, you wouldn't really want to do that because, man, they can strike out pretty good with those front feet.
Plus, they're good at ramming things. People don't realize that because that's what they do during a mating season. They'll butt things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They can put up a pretty good fight. You know, it's like,
oh, yeah.
Friend, but if you're out there and, you know, you run into a deer, most of them are skittish enough. You know, I love watching this time of year because the fawns now are strong enough to pretty much be on their own. And they're funny. You know, you'll see them roam through. But yes, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, the deer population has exploded. You know, you get up north like Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, that's where people hunt. You know, they're pretty much hunting for food.
Right.
But down here, you know, even the hunting thing, it's a very short season. People get out there and you would think like most of them are so ill-prepared that the deer have a pretty good chance.
Right.
Yeah, you know, another thing, too, is how many deer are actually killed on the highways.
Mm-hmm.
It's so common to be driving just from here to through Connecticut and see 2 or 3 deer laying beside the road.
Oh,
because,
sure.
I mean, they just start running out. And this is also, you know, when rut season comes along, when you have...
Right.
And you have the bucks jumping out of the woods chasing girls across the highway. I mean, you know, you
yeah,
see a lot of them.
Yeah, that's when you get all the roadkill, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like, it used to be you never had a moose sighting below, let's say, New Hampshire, the border, or, you
mm-hmm.
know, once in a great while, one would roam into northern Massachusetts. And now we have moose that have inundated Massachusetts, going down through Connecticut, all the way, you know, into, so moose are now becoming common.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
And why wouldn't they? There's good grazing as they come down. You
right.
know, it used to be you'd have to travel up to the mountains to go see a moose. And yeah. now you can, we've had 4 or 5 in my town, you know, that have come through.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, and we're on the border of Connecticut.
Yeah.
You know? And it's kind of fun down here because everything stops. You know, like if there's a moose, everybody stops. It's like, there's a moose. Up north, you just think it's like, okay, there's a moose. Down
yeah.
here, it's like, you know, it's interesting. So, yes, the environment has changed, and our animal population seems to have shifted to go with it.
Yeah.
You know, we provide, let's face it, as human beings, we provide a great food source for especially your scavenger animals. When you mentioned coyotes, fisher cats, those kind of things.
Right.
They don't have to work too hard anymore.
No.
No, I agree. Yeah, couldn't agree more. It's really interesting how much wildlife we actually have here now. And with all those green spaces that have popped up, because you're absolutely right, whether it was the early settlers or even the Native Americans, because I believe even in New England, they used clear cutting or whatever,
yes.
slash and burn, whatever that was. They would take large areas and clear it out. And nowadays, yeah, we fly over New England. It's just one big green forest. It's amazing.
Well, let's say I am Sasquatch, okay? And I'm roaming through, and I've come out, let's say, from the Great White North, followed the path down through Vermont, down the Berkshires, cut across Connecticut. I'm going to basically be able to dumpster pick my way. I'll be like behind Pizzeria Uno chowing down on
the bed. And, you know, the other thing, Gary, is absolutely, you know, if you could have something like if it was one of my things, like sci-fi episode of whatever, and then you could have just whatever, whether it's infrared or whatever technique you want to use, and just highlight at any given time, especially, say, twilight or night or whatever, what kind of animals are actually there and you're completely unaware of it.
Sure.
They are expert at stealth. Obviously, almost all animals, even the apex hunters like a mountain lion, they have to be stealth because they don't want their prey to know that they're there.
Right.
They're all extremely skillful and quiet at what they do. Maybe not a bear. They're kind of stinky and they're, you know, it's not much wants to really tangle them anyway. But so those you might know are around. But in the main, you don't. And for instance, I had a friend of mine, unfortunately, because I was going to go visit her down in Florida and finally get away like Northerners do and go to Florida for once, or actually like for twice in my life. But anyway, no, she took ill. She's an older lady and she's had to fly home. She's wealthy, so she comes back on a private jet. And she comes in Groton at a, not at the New Groton London Airport. It's all contiguous. It's all part of the same complex right there. And so what's super cool is I get to go drive my car on the tarmac and wait for her there. Can't move. A guy there brings me around like an old golf cart. I just drive behind him. He goes, just do what I say. Don't drive. Go driving like a maniac. Okay, so of course I'm going to do that. And then you're on the tarmac and watching the plane fly down. It's amazing how good those pilots are. Anyway, as I'm waiting, I'm just scanning around. This is Groton, Connecticut, right on the ocean. Oh, well, Long Island
Sound, yeah.
Long Island Sound. And it's nothing but trees around you.
Right.
Nothing but trees. So you could even go right up to the ocean easily, probably even the day, let alone at night. No one would ever know because that's Bluff State Point. It's a state park, protected. It's all woods. All around the airport, it's all woods in Groton, Connecticut.
Well, one of the big things that, especially if you watch a lot of the Bigfoot shows, they'll be talking about there isn't enough food source to support, you know, life here. And I'm thinking, yeah, go to any mall. Go to your local pizza parlor. At the end of the night, the donut shop.
Here's a hint. You've seen any of these YouTubes where, like, again, out west, especially at one of these national parks, and a bear is opening your car door?
Yeah.
Or even some of these other animals can start to – they see. They're not stupid. And they like, okay, that latch, I go for the latch and that'll open it up. Okay, I work in my sister's business is in the old Mystic Village. For that place, they have, of course, two huge dumpsters, one for regular garbage and one for corrugated cardboard. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, people do come from, because it's 2 inches from Route 95.
Right.
People who know they're going and illegally use it, but it's supposed to be there for the merchants. Well, guess what? We have restaurants there.
Sure.
And I have to say, sorry, but the Thai restaurant, you can always tell when they've made a dump in there because... The first day it actually smells real good, but after, if it hasn't been taken away, it's usually like once or twice a week they come and take it to the main landfill. All you have to do, it's not locked.
No.
You open it up. Look, and you can't tell me Sasquatch wouldn't just go in there and open up and have a field at.
About 25 or 30 years ago, I used to have a place in the remote part of the White Mountains. And there was a local little town, and they had a town dump. Mm-hmm. You know, the good old-fashioned town dump where, you know, people just threw their stuff.
Right. Oh, yeah.
The big thrill up there was there were no drive-ins. There wasn't cable TV. On Friday night, you would all meet at the local diner, drive up to the dump, and when someone gave the signal, you'd turn the headlights on and just watch the cars fight over the trash. Okay.
We, you know, Gary, we did that when we lived in West Yellowstone, and we would go up. We didn't. We had a little tiny theater, and they kept showing the same stupid movie over and over. And by the end of summer, you were really sick of it. But we had a huge grizzly that was coming into our dump. Normally, the black bears are in there. But we had this big one, and it was almost the size of a Volkswagen Bug. I mean, it was a big bear. And so everybody at night was going up to the dump, and everybody was sitting there watching the bears come in. And then this big one would come in, and all the smaller bears would scatter. But that's what people did. That's what, you know, and I had a nurse that was coming in, and he was laughing because he said, I don't believe that that was your life. I said, that's what we did.
But
I mean, that was it, you know. And I said, we were small kids, and they used to close our schools because rabbits out there, those big jackrabbits, would get so dense and thick every 7 years, and they carried sleeping sickness and stuff, that they would come in and just wipe out the ranch's hay crops. And so they, I mean, even the big haystacks, they would just collapse after about 3 days. It was nothing there. And so they would herd them down out of the hillsides during the day on horseback with all these riders, and then they would bring them down into a big trap. And our job as little kids was that we were given a club and we were able to kill them.
Bonk the bunnies.
Yeah, bonk the bunny and watch them go, ooh, and fall over dead. I mean, they took them out by trailer truckloads.
Yeah, the whole deal here is, as far as food source for something like a Sasquatch or any other mythical beast, you don't have to worry about that now. They don't have to, like, run around in the woods. You know,
people,
I mean,
don't stop and think of the intelligence of animals and how they're, you know, capable of adapting and all of that. I mean,
they're evolving with us at the
same
time. You know, it's kind of like the person that buys a new house and says, you know, like I was listening to the thing about the mouse epidemic, and the lady said, it's a brand new house. How could there be like 25 mice in my kitchen?
Mm-hmm.
Well, gee, guess what? You know, it's kind of like, oh, we're going to the new mall for dinner tonight.
Yeah.
You know, and this is how it works. You know, nature adapts. All of these creatures adapt. They all go with it. You know, so if I'm Bigfoot, like I said, I got my choice. I can have Italian, I can have Chinese, I can have Thai. You know?
Just go to a mall.
Yeah,
go behind the mall and you get, you know, you can have your pick of whatever you want to eat.
You guys are in Westerly. Think of how many restaurants there are in Westerly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But around Westerly, it's mostly Chinese food and pizza.
We have a lot more than that, but yeah, we have a remarkable amount of pizza.
Right.
Yeah.
If I'm Bigfoot, I probably maybe unless I'm gluten free Bigfoot, you know,
right.
I could probably live pretty well there.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
You don't have to worry about shelter. There's plenty of overhangs and this and that, and you know, I don't say abandoned, but places that aren't really used.
Mm-hmm.
So. Maybe when they're looking in the middle of Montana and, you know, like under a rock, maybe they should be looking behind the mall instead.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Hey, exactly.
We could start a new reality show here, you know, called Urban Bigfoot.
I'm telling you. That show that did on PBS about the coy wolf was really interesting because it was partially in the U.S., but it was in Toronto. Okay, Toronto is a big town.
Sure.
And it showed these things. They followed this coy wolf. I don't know if they put a device on it or whatever, roaming through Toronto. And what's so great is it wasn't fake. So you're seeing it. And nobody – how stealth it was. Everybody's going about their business. They had no idea this coy wolf was right there.
Mm-hmm.
No, they wouldn't know. And I'm telling you, the same is true for any of these other things.
Sure.
These things can be right on you. One, you're not expecting it. That's number one. Number two, all of these animals that are used to living in and have lived in woods forever are extremely stealth at what they do. They're just extremely skillful at it. Just like, for instance, when I remember one of these shows where, you know, modern man goes to say Papua New Guinea or something like that, right? And here we are, you know, we're bigger, more robust and whatever. And these guys look pretty cut, but they're tiny. They're pretty little people. And then they try to like help them out for a day and they build a new lodge or something, whatever they do. And they can work all day, these things. And the you know, civilized people are exhausted, whatever. But one of the things that they remarked on is within 2 seconds, they're lost in the woods. You know, these people can just zoom off into the woods. And there was this one show, it was a British show, and they spent a lot of time there. And they said, you know, after about a month or so being with these guys, they could sort of do it too. You know, they were finally catching on how quickly you can disappear into the woods.
Right.
But when they first got it, it was like, what is this, magic? Are you a ninja? How the hell did you do this? Because we're just not used to it. We're kind of clumsy. Like, oh, is that log safe? No, they know what rocks and logs, because they're doing it forever. Man, they can just disappear like that.
Well, where I live, like I said, there's acreage behind me. And a couple of years ago, we had a person that came, and my neighbor allowed them to turkey hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I have, the flock is at least, like I said, between 30 and 35 that comes through here.
Yep.
Now, they're here on a regular basis. You can almost set your watch, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the person came, and at the end of the day, they came out of the woods, and I stopped and said, how did you do? Didn't see anything. Didn't see a single turkey, okay? I swear these
probably
turkeys
sit right.
Yeah, the turkey knows beginning of hunting season.
They do know.
Yeah, so the deer do too.
I swear that literally 2 weeks after hunting season, they were all back. Everybody's here.
Yep.
We're all having lunch, you know. But it cracked me up because how could, you know, we're talking maybe where they were hunting was a 10 to 15 acre plot. And in a 10 to 15 acre plot, the turkeys are not small. We're talking large, large birds. And yet, didn't see a single one. There's nothing here. And I'm
you know, a lot of people, they don't bother looking up because turkeys all nest up in high up in the trees.
Correct.
And so they're walking right underneath them, and the turkeys are sitting right over the top of them looking at them. They're not going to come down because they know that they're people. But they nest way up into the trees. Every single night they go up in the trees, and they stay there. They basically stay there all day long.
According to folklore, turkeys are one of the less smart creatures.
Yeah, they're not bright.
Right, but yet here's 30 to 35 of them that can nest see
they're it. Smarter than the hunters. Let's put it that way.
Gary, that brings up a sort of paranormal question. Do you ever contact or communicate with non-humans or animals?
Yes. I do a lot of, as you know, large events, and it's kind of funny. We were out in Chicopee, out in Western Mass, and I was doing a thing, and this was a big show, and I had just delivered this heart-wrenching thing to this young lady about her dad and blah, 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 and she's crying, and the audience is fine, okay? And a little while later, talking to the same girl, there was a husky that came through, a big gray, like a Malamute-looking dog,
mm-hmm.
and there wasn't a dry eye in the audience. They're all crying, her dog's here, and I'm going like, you didn't care about her dad.
Unreal, isn't it?
But that's the way it is.
Okay, but do you just see the dog and say, okay, the dog is there and it looks happy, or is the dog actually communicating anything to you?
The dog is usually trying to connect with the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, I haven't gone away, I'm still here. The bond between dog and owner is unbelievable.
I've had a number of my animals come through with different readings from different people, and I have to laugh because the one time it was Kerry, and mm-hmm. she says, this animal is telling me, she says, you had a tiger? I said, no, I had a brindle. And she goes, oh. And she says, well, she's letting me know that she was the one in charge and that she took care of you, but in the end you took care of her, which was true. She was my service dog. And so, but everything that she was trying to say, you know, was absolutely right on as far as this dog goes. And that was the very first time I met Kerry. So she didn't know anything of me. She didn't know anything of my animals, that I was even an animal lover.
Yeah,
she
you're a
big
animal.
Any
person.
Of that.
You do see on occasion, but they're not the same.
No, it's a dog thing mostly, I think.
Yeah, cats will come through now and then, and they're still sitting there going, like, where's my dinner? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That they're lovely, but the dogs, for some reason, because I think they're pack animals and they're bonded to us.
Right,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, Gary, that gets into the thing, and I don't even know if we as humans always have to come up with some theory as to why something is. But doesn't it seem odd that certain animals can be domesticated, other ones I don't think can be, and or even naturally, I don't know, like a duck, for instance. Ducks are like very friendly little birds, and it's easy for them to, and we eat ducks, and they know it, I think. So I personally love duck, but anyway.
Okay.
But we actually had a couple of ducks for pets. They were fantastic.
They won't even sell ducks unless you buy six of them, because ducks are theoretically, again, a herd animal. The ducks have a leader. The ducks basically understand. What happens is you become, I'll use the term, pack leader, and the bond creates. So, yeah, we raised it. We had Peking ducks for quite a while.
Yeah, we had two Peking ducks, yeah.
And we had quite a few of them, and the deal was basically there. You could see who was the dominant, who was the leader, who was the follower. And when it comes to people, it's kind of the same thing. You become, I don't want to say with dogs, it's a little different. I think it's a closer relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But you become the dominant or the pack leader, so therefore they kind of follow you.
Right.
So if you're the person feeding them, you're now pack leader. So,
hey, Gary, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Have you ever had a wacko like me? Now, I'd had these... This is my second time I've had like a stroke thing, and so I've been really working on my words.
Sure.
Okay, so I do a lot of this word search and all that. You buy the books and you go through that and try to find the words and all that.
Yep.
I started to notice that in the books that I was getting down here at the grocery store and books that I used, I sent away for through those books, that all of our, I mean, in it, there would be names like, I never get anything else but Connecticut, Idaho, and in Rhode Island. My grandchildren's names, which are fairly unusual, are always surrounded by a word called sensei, which is very common for these kids because they're so into judo and stuff. And then all of the other animals that have been coming through and the names in there have been unusual names. We name our animals unusual names. And my daughter's and dogs come from Slovenia. So they are named differently. You know, I started looking through, and here's Dido and Esther, which is E-S-T-H-E-R, Nikolai and Dalton, and then my dog, Nina. There was Levi in there. There was Charisma, which is an unusual name.
And these aren't the words you're supposed to be looking for, right?
No. And these are names of all of our animals who have passed. But the ones that are alive aren't in there. And it's like I'm seeing my past.
Yes.
And it's like, I wonder if it's some sort of connection or something with this.
I don't think it's strictly coincidence, okay? The synchronicity is too much there to just say, okay, this is not something.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, because people, we always look for patterns, but sometimes you're going to get, it's going to be too much for just a random pattern to appear. So you're not insane. Someone's trying to give you that little shot that says, okay, hey, I'm still here.
Yeah.
You know, and one time you would say it's coincidence, but again, you're going to find a repeat pattern, and it's those, something is trying to tell you, like, okay, hey, guess what? You know, there is something else here.
Well, it's not saying, oh, New York or Wisconsin or down south somewhere. It's just those three states. That's the only three states I've ever lived in.
And you'll notice they're all these word searches, it's not the same person writing them.
No.
So
they're different books. They're all. I got seven different books, and each one of them has the names of my dead animals in it.
That's weird.
Yeah, and I just started. I mean, I've been noticing it the last couple of months, and it's like, this is too odd. So I got another book, a different one entirely, and the same names keep coming up in there.
Now, that's got to be more than a coincidence, then. There's something out there is trying to put something in your lap, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, because it doesn't have, like, animals that my daughters, that are still alive with her. But all of these animals, and I got a whole list of the different names. It's like, these are all the ones, and those are weird names.
Yes.
Spot and Dookie and Lady. No, we don't name our animals that.
Right, and these are not random, so they're the full name. So there's got to be some sort of connection to.
Yeah.
Well, kid, this has been a pleasure.
Yeah, well, it's always fun.
And hopefully I'll talk to you guys next month. In the meantime, by the way, I'm just going to give the plug. If anybody wants to reach me, it's 508-943-9058, and yes, I do far more than animal tales. or you can go on my events page on GaryMcKinstry.com and check it out there. Thank you.
All right, and Gary, you were saying you won't be on in July and August?
Well, July is July 4th. I don't know if you guys are going to be on or not.
Okay, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we might be.
We never know what we're doing.
We'll be away in August, so.
Super.
Yeah, I'm used to that one. Okay.
Thank you, guys, and we'll talk to
all
you
right. Take
right
care.
On. Thanks, Gary. Yeah, it'll be spring by then.
Yes. The buds will be out. All right. Well, I hope everyone has a great week.
Okay, Judy. That was a really weird story.
I know, and it's getting weirder, so I'll let you know.
Okay. Hopefully I won't pop up in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, me either. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye, Judy. Okay, thanks for joining us. this morning for the Unknown Zone with Gary McKinstry. For Judy Sellens, I'm Dave Turco. And until next week, have a great month.